I'm joined now by Richard Bell, who is a New York City voting and civil rights trial attorney and also author of Voting, the Ultimate Act of Resistance. He is somebody who is legal expert and has been a source for CBS News and CNB and NBC News and ABC TV and so much more. He is really an expert on all things civil rights, including voting. We'll talk to him about the For the People Act as well that has just that they just passed in the House. But I'm eager to hear, as a New York lawyer, your stance, Richard Bell, on the growing scandals in New York about the nursing home undercounting and, of course, the sexual harassment allegations. But I wonder, if you're respecting, what is the climate like among lawyers there and among the discussions about what's happening and the undercounting?
Yes. So, Laura, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me back. I always love to do your show. It's always fascinating, and we always have a terrific discussion.
We do. I'm glad you're back. Thank you.
You happen to ask the question about nursing homes. In addition to my voting rights and civil rights, I do personal injury and wrongful death cases, many of which are against nursing homes. So this actually is a topic that's near and dear to me. And I think I can answer your question that you just posed is why? What's really behind this? And I'm going to, this is pure speculation, so without any hard evidence. However, what your audience needs to know is that the governor was pushing for immunity for these nursing homes during COVID, immunity from wrongful death and injury cases. And he was being pressured by the lobbyists. This is all public information being pushed by the lobbyists for the nursing homes. And he got his immunity through for a four-month period. And actually, just the other day, I believe it was yesterday, the state assembly is trying to lift that immunity, and then it's going to go to the state senate. So I think we've got a lot going on here that is very underreported.
So talk to me a little bit about the idea of the immunity, because I know when we heard from, say, at the federal level, I remember Senator Mitch McConnell, then Majority Leader McConnell, was talking about wanting to have immunity for employers before certain provisions were passed and before legislative acts were taken, you know, taken up, because they wanted to make sure that people who were returning to the workplace were not, or employers or restaurants, et cetera, they're opening up, were not going to be held liable if they didn't follow certain protocols or their employees became sick or, of course, a patron in some way. So when you talk about immunity for the nursing homes and the lobbyists, what were they specifically asking for?
So they were saying that there should be no lawsuits that could proceed when someone dies of COVID in a nursing home or is seriously affected by COVID in a nursing home. And their argument, well, what is it that we could have done about it? You can't hold this to any standard because it was an emergency. Well, the only problem with that is there were a number of very good nursing homes that took all the right precautions. Whatever is reasonable, that's all is asked for in court, is reasonable conduct, not perfect conduct, but reasonable conduct, whether it's PPE, screening employees, whatever it may have been at the time. And the governor and these lobbyists said, no, you know what, just give them blanket immunity, which means all of those people that died in the nursing homes, at least for that four-month period starting March, would have no recourse, essentially, to sue from the daughters and sons of their states would not be able to sue because it's a blanket immunity from these lawsuits. And so that may have been part of the incentive of him not giving the statistics properly to say, wow, this is much worse than we think.
Wow, if that's the case, I mean, imagine that. I mean, that would be honestly the third explanation that's given, right? Because it's one of those things
where there's
so many, right? I hear on the one hand
before,
it was Trump.
Right, because it's underreported. Nobody talks about that.
Well, you know, it's first of all, a part of all of this really feels like a self-inflicted wound. The idea of, as I said, the idea that everyone was sort of flailing about the numbers. I mean, the numbers that were coming out, that any area that had to bring in refrigerated trucks in order to house the deceased and to keep them before they could be transferred to a mortuary or a cemetery or anything else. The idea that this was happening on such a grand scale all across the country, I think there, not that you would have been safe from questioning, but the idea that you would try to in any way cover up or undercount the numbers at a time when people had unfortunately become accustomed to the visceral reaction of the increasing numbers is already quizzical to me. The other part, of course, as you mentioned, is the idea of what's always going behind. And you wonder about the impact of lobbyists and the idea of immunity. So they actually had they secured that in New York, immunity for nursing homes?
Yeah, so here's what happened. So it came out publicly. The lobbyists wrote a version of the bill. First it was an executive order, then it was a bill the governor pushed through, and they basically, the bill said that for March to August of last year, that essentially there's no case that you'd be able to prove against a nursing home on COVID. But like I said, now the assembly just yesterday passed a law reversing that. Now it has to go to the Senate and back to the governor, because we all have more facts now. We all know, you know, protecting a wrongdoer from immunity, nobody says they had to be perfect. Nobody says they had to do anything other than what a reasonable nursing home, which were many, had done under the same circumstances. So basically, you had these nursing homes for profit, let's remember that, for profit, mostly nursing homes, who got protected from lawsuits and were basically allowed to do whatever they wanted. And just imagine these families. You couldn't get in, obviously, to see what was going on. So things are running amok and you're not even going to have records of it.
God. So, I mean, this is something that you've done so many times. You think about wrongful death. What is the criteria normally for establishing a civil case against a nursing home for wrongful death?
So it's twofold. You have your basic negligence claims, which is, was the conduct reasonable under the circumstances and did it cause the death? But you also have public health law and federal statutes, special statutes that talk about the conduct necessary at a nursing home to be proper conduct. And there's a whole set of regulations, obviously, that favor the dignity and the treatment of people in nursing homes because they are so vulnerable. And when you don't have an advocate or a family member and you're alone in that nursing home, especially, and nobody's watching, the kinds of things that I see in the records of nursing homes and medical records would just turn your stomach. And that's why the federal law was passed and the state law and the public health law was passed in New York to try to get these nursing homes to conduct themselves in a manner that is least reasonable. And if not, that there should be real recourse because they are for profit. We have to remember that part, for profit nursing homes.
God, this story, I suspect, I'm sure you're well aware, we have not heard anywhere near the end of this.
Oh, we haven't even heard the beginning, Laura. Right.
Do you suspect there are other states that have the same issue? I mean, we're hearing about New York. Obviously, there's a lot. I don't want to call it a pile on, but there's a piling on of scandals that are happening. But I suspect there are others who have been having to grapple with nursing home related deaths and counting as well. Are we going to see possibly other states, you think, Richard, on this issue?
I think there's a real possibility, Laura, because my colleagues who do these cases in other states, they have seen what we've seen. And so we suspect a lot of things went on. But as you know, as a lawyer, until things unfold in discovery and you get documents and you take testimony of witnesses, you just don't know exactly what it was. And then it just, the floodgates open up and we find out some of the worst things may have gone on.
Oh, my God. Well, in other news, in other areas of expertise,
I'm sorry to bring you down, Laura, but this is reality, unfortunately.
It's the reality for so many, and the idea of how, you know, there's so much oftentimes a focus on the criminal courts and the system that goes on, but there are so many things that happen on the civil side where that's where you get the most information, the depositions, the discovery periods, where it's not always the sexiest for the media to cover, but it is the meatiest for people to actually understand these issues and why it's so important and why it's so impactful. And there's so many things that go on behind closed doors that people have a tendency they want to settle, they want to not talk about, they have non-disclosures, they want to deal with it on the individual basis. But of course, COVID-19 has thrown that into the, you know, out of the car window and said, no, because if it happened to one, it likely happened to thousands at this point. And so I'm seeing in the future, my magic, you know, crystal ball is seeing a number of possibly class action lawsuits about these issues. And the more information that comes out, the more information even legislatures will have to act appropriately. But I also want to talk about your other area of expertise. You have so many, Richard Bell, and thank you for being a part of the show. And one of them is, of course, what's going on with the For the People Act, which is a bill that seeks to change campaign finance, voting, and ethics laws. Tell me a little bit about why this is so important. You have yourself been an election protection attorney in Pennsylvania and other places, and even during the 2020 cycle, you served in that capacity, even defending people on the ground and people's rights to vote since 2004, at least. Tell me a little bit about this For the People Act.
Sure, Laura. So the For the People Act, which the House of Representatives passed this week, let's start with the good news. It's probably the best piece of federal legislation on voting rights in decades. That's the good news. Okay, they did the right thing. The bad news is that without getting rid of the filibuster, we're probably not going to get this incredibly good bill passed in the Senate. So I think what we have to focus on are two things. One are some of the highlights of this bill, and number two, where the real action is going to be if we don't get rid of that filibuster, which is going to be in the states and the courts. So first of all, what does the bill do? Oh, it has terrific things that everyone would say is common sense. Online voter registration, this is all for federal elections. Automatic voter registration, you go to your motor vehicle office, you go to your social services office, your public university, you automatically get enrolled as a voter. Same day registration, expanded vote by mail, prepaid envelopes for vote by mail and drop boxes. Make election day a holiday. How much sense does that make? A lot. At least 2 weeks of early voting. Have it a law that you can't, it's a maximum of 30 minutes that you should be in line. Pre-registering 16-year-olds, what a great one that is, because you start someone early. By the time they're 18 and they're eligible to vote, they've already done what they needed to do to get registered. So those are all great common sense things. And then a little in the weeds, in addition to this, is campaign finance and ethics of redistricting. Those are a little more complicated. But for the average voter, some of the things I just listed, you would say to yourself, what do you mean we don't have that now? That's ridiculous. Of course right. We should have all these things. It's 2021. But, Laura, as we know from the 2020 election, there's one side that doesn't like these things. And why is there opposition to this common sense law? It's because it's a backlash. It's a backlash by the Republicans to the fact that 67% voter participation, the best in over 100 years. And let's call it what it is, Laura. Black and brown voters turned this election for the Democratic Party in Georgia and Arizona and Pennsylvania and Michigan, Wisconsin. And this is a backlash. And we know throughout history, this is how Jim Crow laws get created. The moment that the power structure is threatened, this is what happens next. And what are they doing in these states? Georgia, Arizona, there's actually 43 states with over 250 proposed bills restricting voting. For instance, Georgia, who has had no excuse vote by mail for 15 years, let's get rid of it. Souls to the Polls, which is traditional for a number of black voters who are go from church on a Sunday to the polls in groups. No more Sunday voting in Georgia. They're going to take that away. And I've actually witnessed Souls to the Polls. It is living democracy. It's a beautiful thing to watch. They want to take that away. No more drop boxes, no more automatic voting registration, same kinds of restrictions in Arizona and these other states. So we're going to have to fight, Laura, state by state and court by court, because the chances of the federal legislation getting passed without that filibuster breaking is not good. So we're just going to have to take the fight one court and one state at a time.
Well, the Supreme Court has been hearing oral arguments this week alone on the idea of at least one state in Arizona and about the tactics taken to try to, reverse some of the political participation gains, at least in one state. So the idea of a state by state inquiry of all these things, there's a long road ahead. And you would think there was a Voting Rights Act of 1965 that tackled all these things. And yet the way that it's been gutted, not only from the Section 5 formula, but also the result, the intent test, and now the results test being on the line. You know, legislation is only as good as the actual ability to pursue cases under it. And if you carve out the substance, if you cut into the fat, the muscle, and the bone, it really becomes impotent in so many ways. Thank you for your time, Richard Bell. I appreciate it as always. Thank you for joining the show on such a wide variety of topics. I look forward to hearing from you again.
My pleasure. Thank you again, Laura.